You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, we'll look at Muhammad Ali's legacy and how issues of race define his life and his career.
First, Social Security can be a key part of the budget for life after retirement or for people receiving Social Security disability benefits. But there can be tough decisions to make about how and when to claim benefits, and it's not always easy to see a clear answer, especially after some recent rule changes.
In her new book, our next guest shares the history and goals of Social Security and lays out some of the most important decisions for you to make about it. And you can join in now with your questions at 800-642-1234. Are you planning your retirement now? How does Social Security fit into your plans? What are you trying to figure out how to do, and what has you confused? You can call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Finance writer Emily Guy Birkin joins us now. Her newest book is Making Social Security Work for You. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you write that it's important to understand the history and the intent of Social Security to get into the right mindset in a way of how to use it. So in a nutshell, what was the goal of Social Security?
Well, Social Security has its roots in the Great Depression, when many people, and particularly elderly, were living in just abject poverty. And at the time, there were many different socialized programs, social insurance programs that were put forth as options for helping to create a safety net for the elderly poor. And Franklin D. Roosevelt decided to create Social Security in order to, for one thing, it was a savvy political move to, he didn't want another candidate to swoop in with a better system. He wanted to have one in place to give to voters. And then partially just because people were suffering so poorly during that, the Great Depression, as I'm sure we all know. But that's the basis of it. The idea behind it is that it's a social safety net. It's never been intended as a retirement program exactly.
And some people think of it maybe synonymously with a retirement program, maybe as a sort of investment, because you've been paying into the system for a long time. That's not really, you write, the way to think about it.
Oh, no, no. It's a common way of thinking of it, and it's an understandable one. Very much like a 401k or an IRA, you contribute money to Social Security while you're working. And so it would be understandable to think of it as, okay, so where's my money when I retire? But that is not how it works, and it's never been how it works. It's always been treated as a direct transfer from current workers to current beneficiaries. So at no point was it ever, you know, your money is being earmarked from every paycheck in an account with your name on it. It's, you have to trust that once you get to retirement, the current workers at that time will be paying for your benefits.
Well, and that takes us into the future of Social Security. A lot of people worry about that, that Social Security is doomed, maybe in the short run, maybe in the middle run. Is it?
No. The thing that there are things to be concerned about for Social Security. The trust fund will be depleted in the 2030s, so in about two decades. And that's something that can make you feel a little panicked. However, the trust fund is only one of the source of income for Social Security. Otherwise, we're talking about that direct transfer, so the taxes that are taken from current workers. There is the amount of interest that is earned on money that is in the trust fund, and then the trust fund itself. So now that's not to say that it's not a problem that the trust fund is going to be depleted in the next two decades, but we are the only country that does a 75-year projection of our social insurance program. No other country in the world does it. So that means that we're in a unique position to actually affect change in time. So it's a little bit scary to see this, but the fact is we are always planning ahead and looking forward. The problem is Social Security is such a political football that it is, they call it the third rail of politics. You don't want to touch it. but the fact is we will do things to fix it. They may want to, you know, give us heart attacks before we get there, but our government is not going to avoid these problems indefinitely.
We're talking to Emily Guy Birkin. She's the author of the new book, Making Social Security Work for You. Emily, we've been talking big picture now. I want to talk about how Social Security affects us, how we can make some decisions. One big thing you write changed in Social Security recently enough that you actually had to go back and rewrite a decent chunk of the book so that you're keeping up. What changed last year?
In October, they made a change as a part of the new budget. They made a change that will eliminate the file and suspend strategy and restricted application. And so file and suspend was a strategy that allowed beneficiaries to, upon reaching their full retirement age, which for anyone who is retiring, who is full retirement age this year is 66, to file for their benefits and immediately suspend them. And that would allow their beneficiaries, so a spouse or children, to still receive the auxiliary benefits based on their benefits, even though they're suspended. That is no longer allowed. That was eliminated as of April 30th of this year, 2016. So they had a six-month phase-in time. And then the restricted application was one of the ways that married couples could really take advantage of file and suspend. When you apply for any Social Security benefit, the Social Security Social Security deems that to be filing for all of your benefits. With what the restricted application, you could say, no, I'm just filing for my spousal benefits, or I'm just filing for my retirement benefits, and still allow delayed retirement credits to accrue on, say, your retirement benefits if you're just filing for spousal benefits. And for some couples, this meant as much as $50,000 or $60,000 more overall that they were receiving in benefits. So that right there is the reason why these have been eliminated. The restricted application has a longer phase-out time. Anyone who turned 62 as of January 1st of 2016 can still file a restricted application.
So the idea here was that these were kind of loopholes almost, unintended consequences of previous changes that had an unintended consequence.
Yes, these came from changes from 2000, which were intended to get seniors back to work. And so it took a few years, but people started realizing, hey, this is a loophole, and I could use that to you know, have more benefits between myself and my spouse. And it kind of snowballed over several years. And in addition to it being a loophole, it also kind of created a de facto two-tiered system where wealthier beneficiaries or those who were in the know were able to access that, whereas beneficiaries who earned less were less likely to know about these options. And so it kind of was an unfair system. And so that was another reason why it was eliminated.
One of the biggest questions you hear about Social Security is, when should someone take it? There are options to take it right when you're eligible or some years later when you're eligible for full benefits. How can someone start weighing that decision?
In general, the longer you wait, the better it is. Now, there are certainly some situations where it might make sense for you to take benefits as soon as you can, which is at age 62. And in those cases, it's generally a matter of, do you need it to keep the lights on? However, if you can any way hold off on taking your benefits, it's going to be better off. Now, people will often think, well, is it really? They'll talk about the break-even point. And you'll see if you take benefits at 62, generally the break-even point shows you have to be 77 before you'd make the same amount lifetime as you would if you take benefits at your full retirement age. The problem is, if you're looking at it that way, you're looking at it as an amount of money that you'll have won, and the only way to win is to die before you reach age 77, which is kind of a grim way to look at things. And second, frankly, when you're talking about poverty in an old age, the worst thing that could happen to you is not dying young. The worst thing that could happen to you is living to be 110 and not having enough money. So it is in your best interest to wait as long as possible so that you can get higher benefit amounts per month, because it goes up about 8% per year that you wait. And then that is permanently what you're going to have, is that higher amount, which will help you as you age.
And some of the advice in your book is finding ways to bridge those few years between initial retirement eligibility and full benefit eligibility by, what, cutting expenses, looking at other means of retirement support?
Mm-hmm. Yes, for some people, I recommend a reverse mortgage. In fact, one of the things that you'll see a lot of times, they'll talk about a percentage of Americans have less than $25,000 set aside for retirement. I mean, and a lot of people do not have money set aside, but in those studies, it's always excluding their major residence. So, well, let's not exclude the major residence. That is worth something. And if you are smart about it, using a reverse mortgage could potentially be a way that you could afford the wait between your retirement and when you apply for benefits.
We're talking to Emily Guy Birkin about her new book. It's called Making Social Security Work for You.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you starting to plan your retirement or closing in on it? Do you have questions about Social Security and how to use it? And what decisions are you trying to make right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation and maybe hear from you in just a minute. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation now with Emily Guy Birkin. She's the author of Making Social Security Work for You.
You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Are you planning your retirement now? How does Social Security fit into your plans? Are you trying to figure out what to do? What has you confused? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Before we go to our callers, Emily, what are some common misconceptions that people stumble on, maybe give them trouble, make them get less benefit that they would from Social Security than they otherwise would?
Well, one of the biggest misconceptions I see is people seem to think that Social Security is just circling the drain. And so a lot of times the thinking is, well, I'll take benefits as early as possible because I don't know how long they'll be there. And that's something that can really bite you if you fall victim to that particular misconception. Yes, there are things to be concerned about, but you don't need to worry that that the benefits will not be there for you. Something will be there for you.
We'll go to our callers now. Helen is on the line in Green Bay. Helen, hi.
Hi, you guys. This is a great program. Emily, I have a question. I've heard that Congress borrows from Social Security, and then there's all the circling the drain comment that you just said. And so I'm wondering, mm-hmm. Is it true that Congress has borrowed from Social Security funds, and if they have, will they pay it back?
Thank you. That's a great question. What you're referring to is a Social Security trust fund, and something that is very difficult to wrap our minds around is the trust fund is not a big vault with money in it. The trust fund works the way any investment or savings account works, which is you know that when you put money in the bank as a savings account, the bank is immediately turning around and lending it out to small business owners, among other, you know, and people buying houses. Same thing with when you invest in a company. They are using that money to pay payroll, to pay for their overhead, those sorts of things. And then they pay it back. Now, the Social Security Trust Fund is used in the same way. And it was written into the original document that this is how the money was to be used. If there was surplus, it was to be used with the full faith and standing of the government backing it and would receive 3% interest. That is what's happening. So when you hear that Congress borrows from the trust fund, that's both true and completely untrue. It is true that the money is used. It's used for all the things that government needs to do, paving roads, schools, military, welfare, payroll for government employees, all of those things. But it is used in the same way that a company uses money to earn more money and paid back with interest. So that is something that I personally did not really understand completely until I really did deep research on this, because it's so difficult to get into a sound bite. But that's the thing to remember, is that when our government uses the money from the Social Security Trust Fund, they are using it as responsibly and in the same way that any bank would use money, because it can't just sit in a vault and wait for it to be used for the benefits. It needs to continue to grow, which means it needs to be spent and then brought back after having been spent that way.
Helen, thanks.
Hope that was clear.
I think so, yeah. I think I kind of get it. Helen, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Pam in Onalaska. Pam, hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Pam?
I would like to ask about my husband has worked most of his life, and I have too. But he is going to be 62 in October, and I have earned more than he has. And so we're wondering, will he be drawing on his for his Social Security, because I've earned more? Would he be eligible to draw on my for spousal or on his own? And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Pam, you're welcome.
Pam, thanks for the call. Emily?
So basically how this is going to work is he will always be drawing on his own. Now, whether or not his own will be supplemented with spousal has to do with how large a difference there is. Now, if she has earned more than twice as much as he has, then he will earn some excess spousal benefit that is the formula is her primary insurance amount, which is the amount that you get at full retirement age, or 50% of her primary insurance amount minus his insurance amount equals his excess spousal benefit. So, for instance, if she were going to get $2,400 as her primary insurance amount and he were going to get $1,000, he would get an excess spousal benefit of $200 because $2,400 divided by 2 is $1,200 minus $1,000 is $200. So then he would be eligible for a $1,200 benefit once he reaches full retirement age. And you can see why these things kind of make your eyes roll back in your head.
Well, Emily, is the intent there if spouse A is the household primary breadwinner, spouse B isn't, maybe they stayed home for some years, that spouse A doesn't get all the money and spouse B gets no benefit or little benefit? Is that the main goal there?
The goal is to be what's known as actuarially fair, which is not straight down the board exactly fair you pay what you get or exactly fair everyone gets exactly the same amount. It's that it's worth a similar amount of similar percentage to what you earned and your household earned. So that's why there are things like spousal benefits and stuff like that. It's also to try to help families where one spouse out-earned another to kind of meet the distance between those two. I find it similar to the tax code. Every single individual rule makes sense in itself. It's when you put them in aggregate that they start sounding a little crazy.
Talking to Emily Guy Birkin about Social Security. Her new book is called Making Social Security Work for You. You can join in if you need some advice at 800-642-1234. Interesting bit of advice in your book, Emily, the 35-year rule for working. If we've worked for fewer than 35 years and we're close, might be worth working a few more years, it sounds like.
Yes. Yes. In order to determine what your PIA is, your primary insurance amount, the amount of money that you will get upon reaching your full retirement age, the Social Security Administration calculates your 35 highest earning years. Now, if you've worked less than 35 years, they put in zeros for the years that you didn't work. So that brings down your average for quite a bit. So if you're close to retirement and you've only worked 33 years because you took time off for whatever reason, you got a late start, however it worked out, it's in your best interest to work another 2 years because that will make a huge difference in how much you will get in your monthly benefit check.
Back to our callers now with Marcus in Green Bay. Marcus, hi.
Hello. I was wondering if according to the rumors or whatever, will my Social Security disability income check maybe be canceled with a new administration that might take place?
Marcus, thanks for that call. Disability, a big part of Social Security we haven't gotten to. Is that something that's vulnerable to the slings and arrows of political fortune, Emily?
Yes. Now, I suspect some of what you're talking about is there was a disability shortfall that was slated to occur in October of 2016. It was nearly 20% that was going to affect current beneficiaries. That was averted by the Budget Act of 2015 that also canceled, restricted application and filed suspend. So that's the first aspect of it. The second, there is no reason to believe that Social Security disability is going to be eliminated. Now, that being said, all of this is government statute, which means that it's possible for the government to make changes. The laws change. That's how things work. However, considering the huge number of beneficiaries who are on Social Security disability and how important it is to our economy, I consider it highly unlikely to the point of impossible that any administration would cancel it. There may need to be changes and tweaks to make it affordable. However, the mass chaos that would ensue if all of the disability beneficiaries were suddenly off the rolls, that would be a problem.
Marcus, thanks a lot for that call. As we start to wrap up, Emily, make the case that a little bit of homework on Social Security can make a pretty big difference.
It makes a huge difference. As little as another $1,000 per year. So that's over an entire 12-month period, so about $80 a month. As little as that reduces your chance of being in poverty by 1% to 2%. So the more you know, the better able you are to get the full benefit that you are entitled to. And believe me, I truly want people to get their full benefits. You are entitled to that. That is what the law says. So you should work to get the full benefit available to you. And the more that you get, and it's just $1,000 per year, the less likely you are to fall into poverty as you age.
Emily, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Emily Guy Birkin. She's a finance writer. Her new book is called Making Social Security Work for You. You could share your Social Security advice, maybe your story, at the Central Time Facebook page. And while you're there, we have a link to Emily Guy Birkin's website. She answers questions there, has advice on personal finance in general, not just on Social Security. Again, you can share your story and find a link to that information. It is all at the Central Time Facebook page.